Hello and welcome to Cut the Cake, the no BS wedding podcast sharing industry secrets and wedding day intel couples are craving to plan and enjoy their wedding planning process with actual info you need and plenty of laughs along the way. I'm Melanie James, aka Melly Rain, and I'm joined by
Tanya Hall, aka the Event Wanderer Co. And together we are your hosts, bringing over 20 plus years of wedding and event industry insights to your ears. When we started Cut the Cake, we wanted to give couples a platform to ask anything and everything they were going through in their wedding planning process. This month, we have had some great questions sent our way.
Questions like, what styling trends are hot this wedding season? Are mix and match bridesmaids dresses still a thing? How do I find good wedding vendors? And even some curly questions like, can I invite guests 4 weeks out from my wedding date? And should you invite people to your hens if they aren't invited to your wedding? So get ready for some honest answers. Here we go.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Cut the Cake, and we are back for our fifth audience Q&A because we love these sessions, and it is a great chance to dive in to your questions, and we've got some really, really good ones this time around. So I am going to dive straight in with the first one for you, Mel. What are your thoughts on the current trend for mix and match bridesmaid dresses at the moment?
Well, this feels like a very obvious answer from me, because if anyone jumps on my website, you will see that there is color galore. So I'm all for this. I think gone are the days of matchy-matchy, and I know that will really not sit very well with those who like things very clean cut and in a certain way, which is still absolutely fine if that's how you want to do it. But I think there is definitely a shift to more mix and matching bridesmaids dresses, whether it is, let's say it's blue, different shades of blue, or if it's a particular type of dress in different colors or anything like that. I think there is definitely that open-mindedness to allow your bridesmaids to feel really comfortable in what they're wearing, whether it is a color, a style, whatever it might be. So yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. I think everyone gets happy from it.
I second that, because I also think too, there is a higher likelihood too that your bridesmaid will actually wear that dress further down the line. So it's not going to just be a once and done piece that's going to sit in the wardrobe, a la the movie 27 Dresses, where she's got 27 bridesmaid dresses. So I am all for this whole concept. And I just actually think it looks stunning in photos. And some of the best photos that I've seen are where you've got colors of the rainbow and like different styles. And I just love it. So yeah, I'm all for it. Yay, mix and match. Do it.
Yeah, 100%.
All for it. Yay. Good question.
Yay. That was quick. That was easy. We like it.
I know. I actually think we're going to fly through these questions today because they're really good questions, but we've got, you know, pretty concise answers on what we want to suggest.
I'm going to ask the next one for you. How do I find good wedding vendors that are in my local area? This is something that a lot of couples ask me, and particularly if they're, you know, getting married in a particular area that might be a little bit more remote or something like that. How would you suggest people find vendors in their local area?
Oh, so I've got a couple of really good suggestions for this. So my first one is obviously going to be good old Google, because it is a global search engine for a reason. So if you type in weddings, for instance, Phillip Island, you're pretty much going to end up with all the wedding companies that are listed down here on Phillip Island, or potentially have a wedding related service on Phillip Island. My second one is then looking at business directories and Facebook groups. So a lot of the regional communities have wedding groups for various spaces. Like I know I'm part of quite a few regional ones here in the Gippsland area. I'm part of ones for Metro Melbourne. So I would say have a good old search of Facebook and see if there are any small groups that are in your particular region for where your wedding venue might be, whether it be the Yarra Ranges, whether or not it might be for New South Wales or Queensland, wherever it is. Have a look at that. Facebook and Google would be my first starting point. And then also reaching out and just putting putting out requests in Facebook as well to see whether or not people know anyone within those areas as well, to see what their recommendations are. Because the reality is too, some businesses actually travel. Photographers, hair and makeup artists, all that type of thing. If they're willing to travel, they might not necessarily be geographically contained to one area. So yeah, you've got to kind of look and see what's around and have a look for what might be out there. And also just ask. Don't be afraid to jump on someone's website and ask whether or not they're willing to travel to your area.
I have a couple of strong opinions about this. And I think the key word in that question is good wedding vendors. So 100% Google directories, Facebook groups, I think they're a great starting point to see who works in particular areas or who's willing to service those areas and stuff like that. I think the catch is figuring out if they are the right type of vendor for you and if they are, in quotations, good at what they do. So I think once you've sort of narrowed your list down to vendors who are in the area, who service the area, you need to go that level deeper and look at reviews, whether it's Google reviews, Facebook reviews, online reviews, testimonials that they might share on their website, Instagram, whatever it might be, because there could be a million florists in a particular area, but one florist might be really, really bad for some particular reason or not very nice to work with. And I'm not saying that all florists are, but I'm just using them as an example. I think you need to do that next layer because in my experience of helping people get married in regional areas, because I predominantly do weddings in regional Victoria areas, there might be only a limited number of a particular type of vendor that are in that local area. So I think you also need to be really, really mindful that if you are getting married in a particular area and you're keen to use local vendors, all for it, support local, yay, yay, yay. But the ones who are in that particular area may not be the right fit for you. So you need to be open to looking at vendors who are outside of that immediate area, who are willing to travel to that area. You might be copping some travel and accommodation fees, but I personally think that's absolutely fine to do and fine to pay for. I would much rather pay for travel and accommodation and have a good vendor than someone who's local and actually doesn't really care about what they're doing for your wedding day.
And it comes down to what your version of good, as you said,
exactly
is. Yep, 100%.
Yeah. So it really does depend what you're looking for, who's the right fit for you. But yes, I think a big thing is looking at reviews. Another avenue that I would suggest you look at, and again, whoever is on this particular list may not be the right fit for you, but if you've got a venue locked in, most venues will have a recommended list of vendors that they work with who are typically local or they travel to the area for that particular venue. So ask that venue for their recommended vendor list. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're good. So as in good for you. So do your research, make sure that they're the right for you before you actually lock them in.
Perfect. All right. So on to the next one, which is kind of going to be a very good one for you. What are some of the trends you are seeing at weddings at the moment?
So many fun ones, which I'm very excited about. And I'm so glad someone has actually asked this. And I think it's probably appropriate given, you know, we're sort of the start of 2024, but leading into the next wedding season as such, which is end of 2024, start of 2025. So what I'm seeing a lot of is a few things. So ribbons is a big thing that's coming in. I'm not sure if you've seen them around. So ribbon, whether it's like, you know, beautiful long ribbon on your bouquet, thin ribbon around your champagne tower, like on some of your champagne glasses, just a few of them. Ribbon on your place cards, on your invites, just so many like little elements that you can add ribbon to, which is quite big at the moment. We cannot stock them quick enough. Like, we are selling them like they're going out of fashion. I'm seeing a lot more color, which I, again, is unloving. And it's not necessarily like the bold colors, but sort of like soft blues, lemons, those sort of colors I'm really seeing coming in. Very much sort of like that Tuscan Italian sort of vibe, which loving. I reckon the last couple of years, and I don't think this is ever going to go out of fashion, but like those very neutral colored palettes and, you know, greens and whites are still really popular and still really beautiful. But I think people are getting a little bit more into the color side of things, which is really awesome and I love. I'm also seeing a lot of pearls and metallics come in. So whether it is literally like elements of pearls included in table decor or metallics with, you know, cutlery and stuff like that, I'm just seeing that a lot more. So I reckon those four things, ribbon, pops of color, pearls and metallics, are definitely things we're going to see in the upcoming wedding seasons, more and more of.
Nah, totally agree. As I said, we are literally, silk ribbon at the moment is just something we cannot stock quick enough. And it's funny, like the popular colours that we've got flying out are the blues, the lemons, the rust, the burnt orange colour, and the lavender as well is starting to pick up too. So kind of seeing all those colours, still the traditional greens, your sage green, all that type of thing, still really popular. White and black, still incredibly popular as always. But nice to see the colours are really starting to lift as well. So yeah, I would agree with that one, which is lovely to see. Splashes of colour everywhere.
Yes. That makes us happy.
Yes, it does.
Now, the next question is all about vendors, but I am going to throw it to you. I reckon we've both got opinions about this. And this could be a bit of an open-ended question because it's not a vendor-specific question. But the question is, how far out should I book my vendors? So I'm going to let you start with that, Tanya, and then I'm going to have my two cents.
Look, we've discussed this on many occasions, and it is one of those ones that it's almost like a question of how long is a piece of string, because I always feel that you should do it as soon as possible, depending on what you list in terms of your importance with your vendor. Like if you have a celebrant who you adore and they have limited availability, then you need to lock them away whether or not your wedding is in 6 months or 16 months. If they're starting to get busy and you really, really want to work with them, if you need to lock them in 2 years down the track because that's when their availability is, then you need to book them. So it's the same with wedding venues as well. It's a case of if you rock up to a venue and you've got your heart set on it and they don't have availability for the next 18 months, then that's kind of something that you have to pretty much settle with and say, well, are we willing to wait that long to get married? So it is something that I would say, work out what is important to you. What do you want to book first and foremost? What are your non-negotiables? And then start to lock them away as soon as you are ready to start your wedding planning process. Now, I will say this, this is the ex-event manager in me. And I was recently at an event where we were speaking with a lot of couples who it did shock me the number of people who were planning weddings for the first half of this year, and I'm talking April, May, who had yet to send out their wedding invitations. And to me, that is quite concerning. I feel like they're really limiting the amount of time that they're giving them. And I also feel that that puts unnecessary pressure on their wedding vendors as well to turn stuff around. Like it's just being mindful that the further out you can be organized, the better it can be for everybody involved, and you are going to get a much better service out of your wedding vendors as well at the end of the day. Start to book things in when, you know, the sooner the better, really, at the end of the day. Even just starting to talk to people, because people do and wedding vendors do get filled up because you're not the only one out there planning a wedding.
Yep. Okay. My two cents. Get ready.
Yes, please go. Yeah.
I'm very conscious to not talk about this for forever and ever because, like you said, how long is a piece of string? I think realistically, if you are planning a wedding within 12 months, it sounds like a long time, but it's not very long. So ideally, as a planner, I would love 18 months, if not more, to help plan a wedding properly. So I think if you are planning to get married 12 months or sooner from your wedding date, you need to start doing things from 12 months. Like if you don't have the majority of your wedding planned by 9 months out, you're going to be putting the pressure on leading up to your day. So I'm not going to, I guess, say specific vendors because we've spoken about this so many times. Like book your non-negotiables first. There's key ones that you should probably look at, but start with your non-negotiables and then work your way through it. But I think the thing I would point out here to add on to what you have said, because I completely agree with everything you had said, if you are a couple who are sort of leaving things to the last minute, and by that I mean, you know, you're planning your wedding 6 months out or something like that, most vendors, wedding vendors, have taken bookings, you know, 12, 18, 2 years in advance sort of thing, as in 12 months, 18 months, 2 years. So if you are going to a vendor asking for something sort of last minute, some vendors are going to charge a last minute fee, which basically means like a quick turnaround to bring their services together because they're adding more to their plate that they maybe didn't necessarily take into consideration because they've already like filled their books or whatever it might be, or they've got a full calendar. So I would just keep that in mind. I personally am seeing more and more couples not planning their wedding too far in advance, which I think from a planning perspective is a little bit concerning. I don't personally like it. Like I said, I definitely want at least 12 months to help couples put things together. So if you are a couple and you are engaged, I would be looking at least 12 months in advance to book vendors. I think anything less than that, you are just putting added pressure on yourself to put it all together in a really short amount of time when it comes to wedding timelines.
All right. So moving on to the next lot of questions, and these kind of all really relate to each other. So we'll start with the first one. What are your thoughts on receiving a wedding invite 4 weeks out from the wedding date? So, okay, from a planner perspective, working with couples, typically couples will have a couple of different lists, I suppose, when it comes to their guest list. So if they're working on a particular number with a venue that they can't go over and stuff like that, they might have, called like the traffic light system, a list that's green, like these are all the must-have inviting people. Amber is, we might invite them, not too sure yet, could come down to numbers, costs, all that sort of type of things. And then a red list is like, we're not inviting these people. Like they're on the list, but we're not inviting them. So most couples, I will suggest doing that because then you have an idea of your list, but be mindful that as a guest, you might get an invite down the track because potentially what the couple is doing is looking at their, essentially their green list, inviting all those people and then waiting for their RSVPs to come back. And then if they've got a whole bunch that can't make it for whatever reason, they're then probably going to reach out to their amber list and invite a few people from that list. So there is that possibility that you could get invited to weddings after, I suppose, like the initial group. I think if it's 4 weeks out from a wedding date, that's really cutting it fine, I suppose, from a guest perspective. Like most people know what they're doing a few weeks in advance. So I think if you're a couple doing that, I would just suggest having your RSVP dates well before your wedding date. So if you're sending out an initial guest list to people, have that RSVP date like 6 months before your wedding date. I know that's a lot of time, but have it well before, because then by then you'll have an idea as to who is actually coming to your wedding and if you've got that capability to invite people on your amber list. So that's how I would do it. But I think 4 weeks out personally is not very, it's not very nice way to invite guests to your wedding. I just don't think it sort of sits well with guests.
No, it makes you feel very lastminute.com.
Yes. So that would be my thoughts on that.
No, and I would agree with you on that one too. It's a tough one, isn't it?
Okay. Good question to start off our little group questions of this particular topic. Next question in this particular category. Should you invite people to your hens if they aren't invited to your wedding? And I'm assuming let's also go with bucks as well. So if you're inviting people to either your hens or your bucks, should they also be invited to your wedding? What's your thoughts, Tanya?
This is an interesting one because I would say your bucks and your hens is almost an extension of your wedding because you can include people in your bucks and hens who might not necessarily be able to make the wedding because of the numbers, you know, restrictions, etc. The likelihood that at your bucks and hens that you're going to need to have your Auntie Joan who's 80 years old and is the prerequisite of your mum and dad is highly unlikely that they're going to want to come to your hens. But
you might want to have the work colleagues who have, you know, you've worked with for the last 5 years or whatever, you might want to have them at your hens. So I would not be adverse to having additional people at your hens who might not necessarily come to the wedding. But then again, whether or not that's a conversation to say, hey, look, I'm really sorry, I'd love to have you at the hens, but just for numbers reasons, we can't have you at the wedding, you know, for family reasons or whatever it is, that's a conversation that might need to be had. But it's also a nice way to actually include additional people in the celebration that, you know, you might not get the chance to celebrate with otherwise because of numbers and families and, you know, trying to include everybody, which you can't always necessarily do. It's a catch-22.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that side. I think your point of having that conversation that, you know, unfortunately, we can't invite you to the wedding, but we'd love to have you involved with the hens or the bucks. I think that's a really nice way to approach it. I think the not so nice way to do it is if you are inviting someone to your hens and or bucks night and you haven't actually had that conversation with them and they're sort of, I guess, sitting in limbo as to whether they're invited to the wedding or not. So I think at the end of the day, hens and buxes can actually cost a bit of money, particularly if you're asking people to contribute, you know, $200, $300 towards what you've got planned for the hens or the bucks. If you're then inviting people who aren't invited to the wedding, I think that's just a bit of an investment that those people might be making that they might not necessarily feel comfortable with or feel a little bit excluded from the actual wedding side of things. I think the other thing to note when you are typically at a hens and or bucks, the topic of conversation is the wedding. So everyone's going to be talking about the wedding. So if you aren't invited to the wedding and you don't know it at that point, then that could be a really awkward position to put someone into. So I think, yes, you can invite people to your hens and or bucks if they're not invited to the wedding, but I think the respectable way to approach it is to actually have that conversation with those people around that they're not invited for whatever reason. And if it is, you know, numbers or money, whatever, that's fine. I think just having that conversation beforehand is a nice way to approach it.
And be understanding if they choose to say no. Be very understanding and say, yep, totally get it. That's fine. And give them the option.
And I think that lands for like either of people who are going to the wedding as well. Like if you're asking people to, you know, contribute hundreds of dollars towards your hens and or bucks, and they're not in the position to do it, but they still obviously really want to come to your wedding, then I think that is a thing that you need to be open to respecting to as a couple, if that's what you're asking people to do.
100%. Well, is that it? That's it for today. That's all our questions. They're short and sweet today. Woohoo! We smashed through that. I know, but they were good questions. So thank you so much to everyone who have sent those through. There were some curly ones in there, which I think are always good to add to the mix when we're going through these types of questions. So as always, if you have got any type of wedding-related question or event-related question, get in touch with us. You can send us a DM on Instagram at Cut the Cake Podcast, or you can send us an email at hello@cutthecakepodcast.com.au, and we'll add them to our list to go through in our next Q&A episode.
If you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like to hear more of us in your ears, subscribe to Cut the Cake on your streaming platform and leave us a review.
We'd love to hear from you. So if you have a burning wedding question for us, be sure to slide into our DMs on Instagram at Cut the Cake Podcast, or send us an email at hello@cutthecakepodcast.com.au.
Thanks for listening. And remember, a party without cake is just a meeting. We'll be right back.